Stephen Alcoholic? Stephen H. Alcoholic? My sobriety date is January 23rd of 2006. The Tampa Bay Young People's Group is my home group also, and I have a sponsor, and I have the privilege of being able to sponsor some other guys as well. To be honest with you, I was looking for a little bit more, Glenn, you know. I was looking for a little bit more. My wife was sitting here, and I was waiting for you to say something good so I could ask her if she heard you, but I appreciate you not speaking too highly of me when I'm in the room, because I feel kind of awkward when people talk highly about me when I'm there. So if you have something good to say, make sure I'm not around, guys. It's been awesome to being able to be a part of your sobriety, man, and watch you grow and just stay sober, you know, do what we do here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'll be honest with you guys, this is my least favorite thing to do. I hate speaking. You know, when I was new in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'd tell my sponsor, I'll clean the ashtrays, I'll take out the garbage, you know, but where I draw the line is I'm not speaking, you know. And as soon as I said that to him, he's like, that's great, you're next speaker here next week, you know, because every time I drew a line in the sand, we had to cross over it because I had to be willing to go to any lengths to stay sober, you know. And I was taught here in Alcoholics Anonymous is that I never say no to AA, you know. And as long as the date is available, even though when I don't want to do the things that I'm asked to do sometimes, you know, because if I got to do what I want to do, I'd be at home right now, probably watching basketball or something, you know. So I'm just going to get into it real quick about what I was like, what happened, what I'm like today, and let my buddy Rob come up here. And I haven't seen Rob in a long time. I'm kind of excited to see what he has to say. And welcome to Dave and Jeffrey. You know, please don't let anything I say ever stop you from attending another meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm going to get right into it, man. You know, I come from a great family. You know, my parents are still together to this day. They love each other very much, and more importantly, they loved us kids very much. You know, I have three brothers and a sister, and you know, I was brought up in a great family, and nothing that I ended up doing in my life or my alcoholism or any decisions that I ended up making had anything to do with the way I was brought up. You know, my parents tried to raise us with integrity, with character, with honesty. And as I tell you guys, you'll soon see that I lost those things along the way. But we were born in, I was born in New Jersey, and we moved down here when I was seven. I used to think I was 10 when I moved here, but I heard my cousin speak, and I guess we were seven. So when we moved here, you know, I couldn't put my finger on. I hear a lot of things in Alcoholics Anonymous is, you know, I felt different. I didn't feel like I fit in, and you know, I didn't have those words when I was a younger kid, you know. And the main thing I can remember about my childhood is like I always wanted to be somewhere else doing something else with someone else, you know. I always wanted to be doing something. I could never be sitting still, never. Like, if I was somewhere Friday, I was planning what I was doing Saturday. Like, I was just never comfortable in my skin, and I didn't have those words at that age, you know. And basically, I'm going to get to the drinking part, is we moved up to Florida when I was seven, like I said, and we followed my mom's side of the family. And, you know, family's very, very important to us, you know, and our family was always very close. I probably have, like, 30, like, I mean, uncles, cousins my age, brothers, sisters, and we all lived like 5 miles from each other. And, you know, there was always some chaos going on in our family, you know. And my cousin's parents would call my parents and be like, your son's making my kid do this. And my mom would be like, it's his fault. And we were always like pointing the finger at what was going on in our family. I loved it. I loved our family, man. And we were crazy, and I loved it. We were always close, though, you know. We were always with each other. We were always at each other's house hanging out. And you know, that my cousin was like one of my best friends growing up. We're 6 months apart, and like, we've been through everything together, you know, even sobriety, which is kind of cool. And you know, by the time I started getting older, I had this problem in class. You know, teachers, they diagnosed me with ADD, and what I come to find out is I just couldn't pay attention to anything outside of myself, you know. If the teacher wanted to talk to me about how great I was, you know, I could pay attention great, you know. But if they were teaching a lesson, like I was throwing paper balls, I was trying to be funny guy, and you know, it was causing problems in my house. You know, I get suspended off the bus, and my school is like an hour away, so it inconvenienced my mom of having to take me to school, and she has two little kids at home, and you know, I just started acting out, you know, and when I was 13 years old, like I've played sports my whole life, and my father was always my coach, and my father was always someone I looked up to, man. You know, he obviously played a huge role in my life because he's my dad, you know, but he was always someone I looked up to. He provided for his family. He reeked of manhood. You know, he was always there. You know, he was a great guy, and he's somebody that I strive to be like today. And that reek part was not bad. It's good stuff. But you know, and I basically, he would try to teach me some kind of responsibility as a young man, and I just wasn't having it. You know, he'd be like, Steven, either you're going to bring your grades up in school, or I'm going to stop being your coach. You know, I'm going to stop doing these things. And obviously, I didn't listen to him. And what I come to find out is, you know, I'm a feelings guy. I'm not a facts guy. You know, looking back at the facts is my dad was trying to teach me how to become a man. You know, but I don't deal with facts. I deal with feelings, and I didn't like how I felt. And, you know, I started acting out at my father. And basically, this guy that I respected my whole life, who I looked up to my whole life, I just started to disregard any kind of authority he had. And, you know, things got bad in my house even before I started drinking. You know, he's trying to set an example for his household. And, you know, he has this young punk running around just doing whatever he wants to do. And shortly after that, I took my first drink. I was 13 years old. And the first time I drank, I didn't get drunk. And the reason being is my best friend, his older brother was like pouring the shots for us. I never used to tell you guys this in my story, but we were playing quarters, and I was 13 years old, and half of you guys in here know me pretty well, and you know I'm pretty competitive, you know. So at that point, I thought the object was to win. Obviously, I wasn't a big drinker yet because I never drank. So my buddy, he got wasted, and you know, he was crawling around on his hands and knees pretending he was a lion. And it was awesome, you know. We ended the day with him sitting in the shower with his head straight down, and I was just like, man, I want to feel like that, you know. Like, and again, I don't know why anybody would want to feel like that, but I remember very vividly that I did, you know. And it wasn't very long after that I had my chance to shine, you know. And we were hanging out outside the neighborhood where I lived, and I had a couple quarts of Budweiser, and I was always a very small guy for my size, you know. And two quarts, and all of a sudden, man, I got drunk for the first time, and it was the most amazing feeling I've ever had. And you know, I've heard a lot of people explain it. You know, one of my good friends, Chuck S. from over in St. Pete, he'd always used to say it took away his ability to care. You know, and I remember for the first time in my life that I was completely okay with where I was, who I was, and who I was with. And you know, I used to be a little bit shy, introverted when it came to the girls, and I was yelling at them going by a mile away, you know, come back, I got to tell you something. And I loved what alcohol did for me. I loved alcohol, you know. And you know, I was willing to give up a lot of things in order to keep drinking, you know. And my alcoholism progressed very, very quickly. And you know, it's not easy to get booze when you're 13 years old and you're like 5 foot and you weigh like 90 pounds. You know, they think you're 8. They're like, what are you doing with that bottle, kid? Give it back. And me and my cousin, we would steal it. You know, we'd steal it from our grandparents. I would steal it from my father. I had an older brother, and, you know, sometimes he'd buy it. And I mean, we'd get whatever we can get, you know, whatever I can get. I just need to get at it right here, right now. I didn't care if I went up, down, or sideways, you know, as long as I didn't have to be right here, right now. And, you know, things got real, real bad in my household, you know. And my parents, they didn't know what to do with me because I started drinking crazy, you know, from the beginning. You know, I would get loaded on barbiturates and alcohol and come home in blackouts and curse out my father. And I'm a 15-year-old little kid, and they have two little babies in the house and other siblings in the house, and they don't know what the hell to do with me, you know. And so basically, when I was 15 years old, I stopped going to school and stuff. They caught wind of this thing called Baker Act, and I'd come home wasted, and they would call the cops on me and be like, yeah, he wants to kill himself for sure, come get him. And And when they would come, it's like I had no defense. I was belligerent. You know, I couldn't like talk myself out. I was like, I'll kill you too. You know, and they would take me in for a couple days, and you know, they'd ask me, you know, why are you trying to kill yourself? Why are you trying to hurt yourself? The psychiatrist, whoever you see when you're Baker acting. And you know, I had no answer for them. You know, my answer was like, I was just trying to have fun. You know, why are you guys always trying to ruin my fun? I was trying to have a good time. You know, and inevitably they would let me out. And you know, by the time I was 16 years old, I was a high school dropout. You know, I've been Baker acted like 9 times. You know, this is like my resume. You know, I have nothing to offer the world. I'm useless. I wake up every single day just trying to get loaded. And my parents, they don't know what to do with me. You know, there's not a pamphlet on like how to handle unruling children, you know, and they didn't know what to do. And I would bring things into my parents' home that my little brothers could put in their mouth and die from, you know. And that's what I suffer from, man, is selfishness and self-centeredness to the core. You know, I never thought about another human being on the face of this earth, man. Not even my little brothers. They could have easily, I mean, in my condition, I was leaving things everywhere, and they could have easily put something in their mouth and died. And, you know, I never thought about it, you know. And if my parents did find it, it was like, you need to give that back to me, otherwise someone's going to kill me. You know, like anything I could do to get back what they found. Like when I look back what I did to my family, man, it hurts me a lot, you know, because those are the people that I hurt the most. The people that I hurt the most are the people that share my last name. And I ran them into the ground, man. And by the time I was 17 years old, I'm getting wasted on a daily basis. I don't go to school. I don't work. You know, I'm a leech just taking off my parents. And, you know, me and my, actually, when I was 16, I got into an accident, and I was blacked out and did some things, and my father found out, and he gave me an ultimatum and told me, either you're going to go to rehab or you're going to go to jail, you know. And so I went to rehab, obviously, guys. You know, I'm not going to jail if I don't have to. And it was awesome. I went to Fairwinds over in Clearwater, and I listened to Eminem the whole time, drank juice, ate. I was like, man, this is sweet. I can't wait to get out and hang out with my buddies. Like, I did not know what an alcoholic was. I had no idea that I suffered from a spiritual illness. I had no idea what an alcoholic was, you know. I just was like, I drink as much as I want to drink, you know. Like, there's no problem here. And when I got out of rehab, I went back 4 months later to finish out my parents' insurance. And, you know, at this time, my little brothers are getting a little bit bigger. And, you know, there were times in my life that I had maybe little short periods of times in my life where I had good intentions. But it was always good intentions to want to be a good big brother to my little brothers, you know. That was something that bothered me the most. You know, I did a lot of rotten things to people and a lot of crummy things, you know. But I always wanted to be a good brother to my little brothers because they looked up to me for God knows why. You know, I don't know why, you know, but they wanted to be a part of my life. And, you know, when I was 17, I mean, when you're getting loaded on a daily basis and you don't have a job and you don't, I mean, you're not doing anything and you have to stay loaded all the time, you ended up breaking some laws. And I got arrested for the first time when I was 17. And I'll never forget, I got charged as an adult and I was going to court. And I was sitting in the courtroom and I'm like shackled to like 10, 15 other people. And I'm sitting there, you know, with my father with that look of disappointment and like my mom just like terrified, you know, like I was a 17-year-old little punk who thought that I knew everything, you know, and I was still just her baby, you know, and like sitting there and she's crying and she watches this judge sentence her son away to a year, you know, and there was nothing they could do about it, you know, and I remember walking back to the cell block that day. Like, I wasn't thinking about the victims that I hurt. I wasn't thinking about my parents, my little brothers. I was thinking about me, you know, my comfort. You know, when am I going to get out of here? You know, why do I have to go away? You know, like I said before, that seems to be the thing I suffer from the most is my selfishness and self-centeredness, you know. And when I went away the first time, my parents ended up telling my little brothers that I went to college, you know, because they didn't know any different. They were just little kids, man, you know. And the whole time I was away, you know, there was, I mean, I like I said before, I didn't know I was an alcoholic, didn't know what an alcoholic was, and, you know, immediately, as soon as I got out of doing that year, I started drinking and getting wasted again, you know, and after I went away for the year, I mean, I always told my mom I would do something different, and my mom would write me every week, and you know, my little brothers, those were the times when it hurt me that I wanted to be a big brother to them, is when I couldn't be, you know. And I got out, and when I got out, my parents moved to Spring Hill from Tampa because of how I got arrested. And you know, I moved back in with my parents, and again, they would afford me with every opportunity that I would need in order to get ahead in life. You know, all I had to do was be a responsible young man, you know, and I couldn't do it, you know. As soon as I got out, I started drinking and doing what I do the best, man. And I moved back down to Tampa shortly after, and I started couch surfing, you know. And it took about another year and a half before I got arrested again, you know. And at this time, I never see my family anymore. I'm not a part of their lives. They don't want me around, you know. My parents, they had to purchase a safe to put in their home, and it's not because they live in a bad neighborhood. You know, it's because that their own son was going to grab and pawn and do whatever he could with whatever they had. And I even drilled into their safe before, man, like they wouldn't know, you know. I didn't, as like, long as I get inside, it don't matter. Long as I get inside, it don't matter, because then I'll get wasted if I get inside. And, you know, by the time I'm 19 and a half, I would go to my parents' house every here and then just to try to use them, try to get money out of them, try to go up to my mom. Countless times again, she would see her son dying, and I'd walk up to her and be like, give me $20, you know, like it was no big deal. And I was killing her, man. I was killing her. And I ended up getting arrested again, like I said. And when I was sitting in the courtroom the second time, my father, you know, he took me 6 months straight every month. And I hated this guy, man. I hated him. I resented him so much. He was the top person on my force when I made it to Alcoholics Anonymous. I couldn't stand him. And he made sure that his worthless piece of crap son got up every month and took me to court. You know, if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't even been able to make it to court. And he'd make sure I was dressed. I mean, I was useless, man. I was useless. I couldn't do nothing. And 6 months into it, our lawyer came up to us and told us, Mr. Holloman, we got some great news for you. And we're like, all right, what's going on, man? And I never forget this, man. He was like, we're going to go ahead and get you 4 years probation, you know. And that was wonderful news to me, you know, because that meant that I got to go home now. You know, some people get excited about a new car, maybe a relationship. I get excited about 4 years probation, you know, because that's the way I'm living. All that means to me is I get to go home right now. I don't have to go nowhere else. You know, and I'll never forget looking over at my father's face, and he just was shaking his head, you know, saying, you can't do it. And what would make you say that? You know, like, why are you being so negative, man? You know, like, what would make you jump to that conclusion, you know? But I was delusional, obviously, but I was like, I'll show you that, you know. I'm going to grow up. I'm going to become a man. I'm going to go and get my GED. I'm going to go and get a job. I'm going to go and... I'm going to be a good son. I'm going to be a good brother. I'm going to, like, I just thought those were the things that I needed to do in order to be okay. You know, I thought that was the solution to what was going on with me, you know. And everybody knows but us, you know. I didn't know. And, you know, I violated my probation 4 months later. And the only reason it took 4 months is because it took them 4 months to UA me. You know, it would have been sooner, but she told me, you know, she's like, Mr. Holloman, we're going to go ahead and... we made sure everything's out of your system. We're going to go ahead and give you a UA next time you come in. And, you know, I'll never forget, I was 20 years old, and I was sitting in my parents' bathroom getting loaded. And right before going to see my probation officer, saying to myself, what can they possibly do to me to make my life any worse? What can they I hated my life. I hated what I'd become. You know, at this point in my life, I couldn't even look in the mirror anymore. And I didn't want to live no more. At 20 years old, I had nothing to live for. And, you know, so they sent me to prison. And then I cared, you know, but it was a little too late for that. And when I got sentenced to prison, I went back to the jail that day to call my, I was calling my parents because I was pissed at them, because it was their fault I was going to prison. You know, they didn't get me a good enough lawyer. And that's what I really thought. I thought these things. I thought if they would have got me a better lawyer, I would still be on probation right now. It's their fault. It had nothing to do with me. You know, I never took in any kind of responsibility for any of my actions my entire life. You know, and I don't believe that until I took some responsibility for myself that I could ever get sober. But when I called, my little brother picked up the phone, and he was 11 years old at the time. And this kid looked up to me, man, you know, and he's awesome. You know, I love my brother. A lot of people in here, my home group, it means a lot to me, and a lot of people in here know that I have a special relationship with my brothers, and I care about them a lot, and I've been able to experience a lot of things with them since I've been sober. But I remember when I called, and the first thing he asked me on the phone is, are you going to be on for my birthday this year? You know, and obviously my answer to him was no. And it was quickly followed up with, I asked him if he knew where I was going, and he told me, because you're going to prison, you know. And then I asked an 11-year-old kid if he knew why I was going to prison, and his answer to me was, because I drank too much. You know, because I drink too much. And like I said before, everybody else knows what's going on with us before us, you know. And that hurt me a lot, you know, because I don't know if it was like, if I have some kind of like twisted loyalty. I don't know. I love my family, you know, and I know my actions didn't prove that, you know. The world judges us on our actions, but I didn't want to do these things to them. I just was an alcoholic with no tools of recovery, you know. And this time when I went to prison, I was like, all right, I ain't doing this stuff no more. You know, no more, Mom, I'm sorry. I'm going to be a good son. I'm going to be a good brother. I'm going to go out and do the right thing. I love you, you know. And she wrote me every week, you know, and they put comments there. They gave me money. You know, my family took care of me. They loved me. You know, I didn't deserve their love. You know, if someone treated me the way I treated them, they wouldn't be in my life today. You know, and they just loved me when I was at my worst, man. And I really believe that it's a privilege that I have them in my life today. And, you know, I would like to tell you guys that after I got out of prison that I stayed sober and turned my life around and happy ending, but that's not the case, you know. I suffer from an illness called alcoholism, and I was drunk 12 hours after I got out, you know. It talks about in our big book how we have built-in forgetters, you know. Strange mental blank spots. We are without defense against the first drink. And I absolutely 100% relate to that, you know, is that I don't understand when people say, just don't drink and go to meetings, you know, because I'm the type of guy that drinks no matter what. I drink when I know if I drink, it'll send me to prison. I drink if I know that it'll take my family out of my life. I drink if I know that it'll make me homeless. It don't matter. I drink no matter what. And there's a process that I must go through here in order for me to stay sober. And after I got drunk, again, my parents, they would afford me with every opportunity that I would need to get ahead in life. And I threw it right in their face, you know. And it wasn't long after that I started running the streets and doing what I do, you know. I'm convicted felon, you know, no education, no work ethic, you know, no nothing. And I would just go out there and try to take from the world, you know. And eventually, you know, my mom, she would, just right before I got sober, I used to call my mom. And when I think back, I was hanging out with my mom earlier today, and I just think back of some of the things she did for me, man, even though it was killing her to do it. It's just, I'm so blessed to have God-inspired people. I've had God-inspired people in my life my whole life, I believe, you know. And she used to meet me on the corner and bring sandwiches to me just to make sure I was eating. You know, I was probably 138 pounds. You know, my face was sunken in. I was yellow. And I was hopeless, man. 22 years old, just didn't want to live no more. Just didn't want to live, you know. So what do all tough guys do when they want to check out? They call mom, you know. And that's what I did. I called my mom. And I told her, I don't want to live like this no more. You know, I don't. And she's been waiting to hear that a long time, I guess, you know, because she got me in somewhere quick. I mean, like 20 minutes later, she's like, you're going here, then get ready. And like 20 minutes later, I'm like, you know, I don't think it's that bad. You know, like, I think we're blowing this out of proportion. It's, you know, and she got me into a place up in Newport Richey called CRC. And, that was January 23rd of 2006, you know, and I had no idea what my problem was, what my answer would be, or the good life I would have today if I followed you people, you know. And my first step was easy for me, you know. My life was a wasteland when I got here, you know. There was not one area of my life I could look at and be like, you know, I could leave that alone. That's going good, right? You leave that? Leave it? There was nothing good. It was a wasteland, so there was not a lot of debating going on with my sponsor. You know, it was like, oh, I got to do that. I was like, all right. You know, like, it's not that I was happy about it. I had nowhere else to be. If I had somewhere else to be, I wouldn't have been here. You know, and I think my sponsor was glad about that. You know, I had to be beaten to a pulp in order for me to listen to anybody. You know, I don't get it. I was a homeless loser, but I still had my pride. You know what I mean? Like, don't tell me what to do. And, you know, And anyway, I went completely through the steps with my sponsor, you know, and that's the process I'm talking about. You know, it's a process I believe that we have to go through. I mean, that I had to go through to be sober, because it's a miracle that I'm sober today. You know, it's a miracle that we can stay sober. It's nothing short of God. And I mean, I was talking to my sponsor yesterday. There's a guy I'm trying to help, and he can't stay sober. He has self-knowledge that he's an alcoholic. He knows he shouldn't drink, but he drinks anyway, and I understand that. And I don't know what to tell him. You know, there's nothing I could tell him besides we have to go through this process together. I could be here for you. We could go through this process together, but I can't answer the riddle, man. It's a miracle that we get to be sober today. And share you guys real quick. Last time I shared here, I told you guys, like, I ended up getting married. We're still together. Things are going good. You know, and I got to share a dance with my mom, and you know, my mom was at my wedding with me. We were crying together, and you know, my little brother, the kid that I was just I've missed his life for so long. You know, I got to go watch him wrestle in states, and you know, I got to be a big brother. And one of my cousins, he made it into law enforcement. I got to watch the ceremony, and you know, my brother, my little brother, the 11-year-old, they answered the phone when I was going to prison. He's graduating tomorrow, and I get to go, you know. And I'm leaving early in the morning to head up there. And those are the gifts of Alcoholics Anonymous that I get. And I don't have a lot of money. I don't drive a nice car. You know, I'm not a big shot, you know. But those gifts that I get, man, they're something I would have never experienced if I never came here. And I'd like to thank you guys on behalf of my family, because they wouldn't get to experience them either. You know, they got to experience a completely different life because of what you guys showed me. So thanks for letting me share. Let Rob come up.